It's got a death curse.
Don't all of you be like me. And then who will help you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wardrobe.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Struggle between good and evil, that delicate balance where the stakes are as high as Armageddon itself. Imagine that every once in a while the scales of power in that war are forced to sway and the outcome suddenly is uncertain. That's what we present for you this time here at Horror 101, where we're educating your fears. A Michael Winner film from 1977 about prophecy and holy transcendence. The only thing keeping eternal evil at bay is the Sentinel.
To thee, thy course, by lot, is given. Charge and strict watch, that to this happy place no evil thing approach or enter in.
This is a film that I hadn't seen in over 20 years. I had all but forgotten about it. Nobody tends to talk about it, but something told me that The Sentinel deserves to be a show. And with my friends, the world-famous Brian Stewart and the cult sensation Nick McPherson, we put it to the test.
This is how this happened. Saturday night, Brian Stewart was here. We killed the fire, we came in, watched Mask of the Red Death. Vincent Price, because Brian Stewart hadn't seen it in a while. So we watched it, and he had time for one more flick, so I'm like, okay, Brian, here's the deal. Remember we had mentioned The Sentinel from 1977. Mm-hmm. I remember watching it when I was younger, like in high school. I rented it, and for some reason, I thought it was significant, but I forgot pretty much everything about the film. So I'm like, okay, I wanted to do a show about this. Why don't we watch the film tonight? That way we can gauge it and figure out if we watch it, we'll be able to tell whether or not it's worth a show. And after it was done, let me tell you. It's worth a show.
It's worth a show.
Show.
It's a who's who of some of our favorite actors before they were big.
The cast in this is surreal. We missed something at the very end of this movie. I'm interested in seeing. Don't say what it is. I'm interested in seeing if he picks up on it.
At the very end. We missed something?
Well.
But there's a fucking quiz at the end?
No. Remember, we went through the cast after we watched it? We went through the cast after it, and you went, holy fuck, that was her? And then, sure enough,
it's a girl.
It's a girl. That's the only thing. So, my suggestion is, before we give anything away, let's watch the film.
Right, I'm going to grab another beer.
Yes, please. Refresh yourselves. Do whatever you need.
Is it okay if I grab a whiskey?
Please. Bye.
The Sentinel stars Christina Rains as the glamorous model Allison, and although she's been with her boyfriend for a couple of years, she decides to get a place of her own after her recent suicide attempt.
How much did you say this place was?
$500 a month.
Oh, I'm afraid that's a bit too much.
$400 is not excessive.
I thought you said $500.
$400. A $50 deposit will be just fine.
Do you have a pen?
Yes.
Was I the only one who fell in love with the decorum of the apartment that she rented?
It was a great place.
With all that woodwork and the historical pictures and stuff like that?
The apartments had a very 1940s feel. Put that in black and white, it would look like the kind of apartment that Sam Spade would have walked through, you know?
Yeah. The sliding doors with the old schlack wood.
Nobody puts a fucking sliding doors in
like
the store
old style Tiffany lamps, like the old canopy type lamps. Yeah, it was a very cool looking place.
And as usual, if it seems too good to be true, it usually is.
Miss Logan?
Yes?
There is somebody staring at me from that fifth floor window up there.
I'm sure you've been stared at before.
Yes, but...
That's Father Heron in 5A. He's been here for years.
He's a priest. He's kind of senile. He just sits by the window. He's blind.
Blind? Well, then what does he look at?
It's not too long before Allison begins to meet her new neighbors, and we'll start with Burgess Meredith.
Chazen is the name, Charles Chazen. I'm your neighbor in 4B.
Well, hi, I'm Allison.
Really? Mm-hmm. May we,
Oh, what a lovely apartment. Absolutely lovely.
I was wondering when I was going to meet my new neighbors.
Maya, you're so pretty.
Everybody remembers him from friggin' Rocky and, you know, even Grumpy Old Men, you know, like, well, of our generation.
Right.
Like, here he's, like, out-femming Tony Randall, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you know, don't mind the parakeet, it's from Brazil.
And then she makes the mistake of wandering into the lesbian's apartment.
We don't get many visitors. I'm Gerda, and this is Sandra.
Hi.
Why don't you stay and have some coffee with us?
Oh, I shouldn't.
Oh, I insist. Cigarette?
Nein, danke. Ich rauche nicht.
Don't be alarmed if Sandra doesn't speak. She seldom does.
Beverly D'Angelo?
Yeah.
This was her second film. I think the first movie she did was kind of like a short, like a documentary.
Right.
This is like her first feature film. She's like, okay, we need you topless. Sure, I'll do that. And we need a simulated masturbation scene where you get off in front of the main character. Yes, I can do that.
Sure. That's not too uncomfortable.
You know what? To be honest, though, I always had a small crush on Mrs. Griswold when I was a kid, so that
the
was like...
The hot wet woman?
Yeah.
European vacation?
Yeah, so yeah. I'm like, hey. But...
That first sex scene, though, that was probably as uncomfortable as that seance scene in Deranged.
She finishes her tea, you know? Like, how many people would be like, yeah, I'm out of here, this ain't my scene. But she actually kind of, like, brushes her hair and kind of looks around like, am I really seeing this? Is this happening? She looks over and she's, like, finishing herself. Oh, yeah, this is happening. Yeah. I gotta go. You know, it wasn't until the other girl comes down and starts fondling her breasts. She's like, what do you guys do for a living? We fondle each other. That's what we do. She's like, okay, I've had enough.
Going so soon.
I'm out. That's all she needed. I'm out.
It's rather rude to eat and run.
I didn't eat, I drank.
Hello, Allison, my darling. Have you been shopping? Making friends?
I like that. It's rude to eat and run. I didn't eat. I drank. I just drank.
And not nearly enough for this shit. Ciao, bitches.
And you know what? At that scene, you look at Burgess Meredith as, oh, thank God he's here.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, because he's cutting the tension and he's...
Save me!
He's bringing her away from this madness, you know? Like,
tickling her with that feather duster thing.
And the fun doesn't stop there. This place is filled with nutballs.
This is Mrs. Clark. From 4A. Miss Parker, dear.
Hi, honey. Glad to meet you.
This Miss Emma Clarkin and her twin sister Lillian from 3B.
My pleasure.
Glad to have you.
Malcolm Stennett, the Clarkin's cousin. This is my wife, Rebecca.
Hi.
She gets to meet them all at a birthday party for a cat. Yeah, a very festive occasion.
Black and white cat, black and white cake.
Ready. Happy birthday, dear Jezebel. Happy birthday to you, my dear sweetheart.
And now, my dear friends, here's where things go from bizarre to downright spooky.
My dear Miss Parker, aside from the priest, and now, of course, you, nobody has lived in that building for 3 years.
The fuck you say?
I don't know who's staying up in that room, but Mrs. Bates has been buried in Woodlawn Cemetery for the past 10 years.
And these were, like, daytime ghosts, too. Like, you think ghosts, you think, you know... Like, think of the disturbances. She was only bothered at night when she was sleeping. In the middle of the night, that's when the poltergeist activity, the noises, right, and the banging and shit like that. But she's bumping into these people, you know, with groceries in her hand midday. You're thrown way off.
Right.
That these are spirits of the damned that are visiting her while she's in this apartment.
So she goes back to the apartments she's visited, and all of them are in decay. No sign anyone's been living there for a long, long time.
Certainly doesn't look as if anybody was clattering about here last night, does it?
Oh my God, could I have just been dreaming? I want to see the old priest.
I'm sure they see he's cared for.
Well, I'd like you to let me in, please.
That would be highly improper.
And that night, when she's visited by the recently deceased, debauched, lecherous specter of her father, it goes from downright creepy to holy Christ Jesus, get me the fuck out of here.
Oh! Hello?
When that door first slides open, you just see his silhouette, and then he just walks at that brisk pace through the hall. It's jarring.
Yeah.
You don't know what to make of it. Your brain almost can't process what you've just seen because it makes no sense.
I remember renting this when I was a teenager, and that is the only part that I remember because it freaked us all out when that happened. Because yeah. I'm like, this was way before REC.
Yeah.
This was way before Insidious. It was the first time where a door opened and there was just like a non-moving silhouette of something there, like very close to her too, and she doesn't know it immediately.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, oh my god, and then it moves.
That freaked the fuck out of me.
I figured it would.
I was just like, okay, door opening, creepy silhouette, where are they going with this? Oh, it's gonna speed walk across the room. Was not expecting that. Holy shit, I tripled.
It was good.
And then it's like, oh, what do we do in this situation? We shine a flashlight towards it because we're awesome.
We follow it.
Yeah. Nothing bad ever happens when you follow creepy, shadowy figures into the darkness. Dad, yay!
The thing I like, not just the creep value of that, but her trying to get out of the apartment, and then she's waylaid by this thing at the door.
Her father.
Right, and she's forced to attack it. It's a really nice stab, like the
good
arm.
Deep cuts.
The yeah. arm shot was good, the chest, the eye trauma. Where's Paul B?
Oh, I know.
Where's Paul B for yeah. this one?
Good eye trauma, the blood looked good.
Cutting off the nose?
I would say the blood looked really good in this movie for the most part, except for the dripping from the upstairs, for the ceiling.
All the razor blades on the table,
yeah.
the dead whores on the bed, all this vision imagery coming at you.
Yeah.
The cherry on top for me, though, is how they filmed her kind of like running out of the building, collapsing and just going fucking nuts, just screaming on the floor
Street.
At the top of her lungs. That, it made me believe like she was losing her mind, and I really enjoyed that.
So what do we have here? Young girl moves to a new place, lots of horrific stuff happening to her. There's a figure of an old priest ever present looming in the window at the top of the building. Does any of this sound familiar?
Like the old man sitting up in the room
yeah.
is very psycho.
Yeah.
The old woman, just the silhouette of the old woman at the top of the building looking down, not doing anything,
yeah.
not moving, not saying, just a plot device sitting up there. That's very psycho. Well, and no sooner did you say that than sure enough, the guy that was in Psycho is in this fucking movie.
Oh, it's Mark Balsam, yeah.
So it borrowed from Psycho, it borrowed from Rosemary's Baby, but I'm not going to sit here and say this is a ripoff. It's its own story.
It's not retelling the same story for the sake of, you know, trying to cash in on a buck. They wanted to make a legitimately frightening movie, and I think they did a good job.
Have you ever seen her before?
That's Anna Clark. She was at Charles Chasen's birthday party.
Mrs. Anna Clark, convicted murderess. Sent to the electric chair at Sing Sing,
March 27th, 1949,
for the murder of her lover and his wife.
I think a lot of this movie for me that's going to make it a definite a strong vote is going to be performances from Burgess Meredith and Chris Sarandon.
Chris Sarandon plays Michael Lerman. He's Allison's boyfriend, and he's trying to find out just what the hell is going on.
Here was an element in this movie is that Chris Sarandon, he's got the intrigue, he knows she's in danger, she's not feeling well, she's telling weird tales about this place that she's living. He goes, he gets the keys to the place,
to it.
He goes and takes a look around, and then he figures out that she's seeing Latin on these pages.
All the pages are different.
All the pages are the same. All of them.
Allison, either one of us is lying, or one of us is seeing something that isn't there. Now tell me, what do you see in this place?
Latin. I see nothing but Latin. Everything in there is
okay.
Latin.
Come here. I want you to write down exactly what you see. Right there. Okay.
To Allison, every book in that building, every page has the same Latin script in it, and its translation leads to a holy prophecy that the church is guarding closely.
This quotation, I just had it translated from the Latin. I was wondering if it might be familiar to you, religious writing or something?
No. It's not familiar.
Are you sure?
I have never seen it before.
Liar! Blasphemer!
Thank you very much for your trouble.
He's a lawyer by trade.
He's a defense attorney.
He's a defense attorney, which means he defends criminals. He also he lies to the archdiocese flat out. When he doesn't get the answers he wants, he breaks back in. He's got keys for all of the apartments. Right, so he has access to all the apartments in this hellish landscape. The only thing that he does that makes him even remotely endearing is his concern for her.
Yes.
Hello, Perry.
Been a long time, Mr. Lawyer.
It's all there.
Take a high chance.
Let's go.
Mr. Lerman is no idiot. He knows the diocese is hiding something, but fortunately for him, he has William Hickey for a client, and he specializes in procuring things in locked places. They find what they're looking for, and it doesn't look good for Miss Parker.
Father in Baltimore. Attempted suicide. Meets Michael Lerman. Second attempted suicide on the death of Lerman's wife. Until July 17, 1976. If these files are right, Father Matthew Halloran dies the same day that Allison Parker disappears and becomes Sister Teresa. Tomorrow.
This is information that should have been shared with Allison before she decides to go back in that building.
Welcome home. Don't be afraid. I was waiting for you. You're such a sweet child.
Mr. Chasen, that lovable man from 4A.
I just love having you around.
It's a fucking archdemon.
So much noise! That's my ear. Now quiet, my ear. Quiet. You are here to join us. I call thee! And they come now!
My absolute favorite scene is when everything is revealed and Burgess Meredith is summoning all of the sort of residents of that prison, and they're all coming out of the woodwork, and he's just, come on.
Arms outstretched, like, let's go, this is our moment.
Yeah, and they're all starting to fill in just how many of these creatures are actually trapped there, and he's the only normal-looking one in the crowd, and he's just, who is this guy?
The director was bold enough to cast some fantastic individuals to play these summoned, tortured souls.
At the end, all those different spirits that came out, if you noticed, a few of them were actually...
With deformities.
There was one that was hydrocephalic.
Yeah.
There was one that was a pinhead. I'm not too sure what the medical term is.
It looked like he had like John Merrick's disease or something.
There were some... He hired people that had real oddities. And people really got upset about
it. See, it kind of reminded me of the movie Freaks, which actually used real, like...
And that movie killed Todd Browning's career for the exact same reason.
Yeah.
Because they thought it was exploitation, that he used real people with real oddities to make a film. And critics and audiences just did not go for that.
Nobody likes having a lens shown on their hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Normal people find that uncomfortable. They don't like being pointed out,
but
that it makes them feel uncomfortable, so they take umbrage at it and throw shit at the person who made them feel bad.
But isn't it worse that they're going to be unemployed? You know, I mean, and now what happened, I don't hear these people decrying amputees when they use them in how many separate films?
Out of sight, out of mind. You don't rub it in people's faces, they don't get pissed off at you about it.
Yes. You are the chosen of the Lord God. The tyrant and our enemy. You are she who is to guard and protect the entrance to this earth. Now you must destroy yourself, kill yourself. Be one with us.
No!
Queen in our kingdom.
What's really interesting is that once you hear from Meredith that their whole driving force was to get her to kill herself, that's why they kept showing her the father. And that whole scene where we liked that table with the razor blades on it that she knocks over when she trips, and I'm thinking, well, what a perfect time now. That makes more sense now. If they're trying to drive her to suicide, of course the razor blades are going to be there. That's what she used the last time she saw her father.
And as they corner her up in the inner sanctum, it looks as if they might succeed in their unholy quest. But Allison is not alone. The Sentinel is still on watch, and it's time for that old man to wield his righteous power.
Resist. Resist. Resist.
As soon as that crucifix is transferred into her hand, that was it. That was the whole ceremony right there. As soon as she touched that, it was handed off. It was like a biblical relay. It's over. There's nothing that they can do. I love movies with prophecy. You know, like this is going to happen. This has to happen. And sure enough, it does.
You must fight it. You must fight it. Resist. Resist.
Another great moment, and it was so simply done, but because of the shadow work and the cinematography, I thought they pulled it off nicely, was when the demons realize they've been defeated, they're not going to get their way, and Burgess Meredith sends them back. And the way they disappear into the shadows, a little bit at a time, works so well. It reminded me of other classic films or moments in supernatural movies where the element is cast into shadow.
It was simple. It was just them skulking back into the shadows and then cutting back to Burgess Meredith saying down, and then next every time the camera cut back, there was fewer of them in there, and the last one
was up against a shadow in the wall, not in the doorway, but and it looked so cool. I thought it was really well done. But this, you know, like I say, it's got enough mystery that it draws us in, and there are enough elements to keep us wanting to see more, and then it ends, I think, with a good satisfactory ending. I like movies where the difference between total apocalypse, the world's going to hell, and, you know, the status quo is like razor thin. You know, it's like we're on the breadth of absolute annihilation, and if she had killed herself, that's it. The doors would have been open, they would have been leeched upon the world, and that's all it hinges on.
Right, it's not a happy ending, but the outcome is good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For all mankind, or we don't even know what the stakes are.
Yeah.
It's one of those greater good type things. It's like, oh, that really sucks. You're stuck in a chair and blind, but I get to go golfing on Sunday, so thank you.
But I mean, that and her soul is saved, right? So apparently, if there is a hell where all these things live, there's some reward for her, that she's not going to hell after two attempted suicides, right?
Well, that's what I was saying before about like Catholicism and unforgivable acts, and suicide marks your soul. That's it.
Yeah.
Because the way that I heard it described to me is that, you know, as far as the Catholic Church is concerned, Christ, if you boil it down to anything else, is hope. And the act of suicide is the abandonment of all hope.
Some critics have suggested that The Sentinel is merely a ripoff of older, more popular horror films.
The Rosemary's Baby elements are certainly there.
Oh, absolutely.
Because they're moving into a new apartment. There's this kind of strange group or cult, you know, that's in the building.
And you're never quite sure about the husband, whether, like,
how involved he is. Yeah, we'll have to trust him. Yeah, there certainly are elements there.
And I understand that, but watching it so many years later, it is a fun movie. If just to sit here and go, oh my god, look who that is! Oh my god, look who that is! Because it's chock full
and
of
also,
people.
And also, for me, because it's the first time I've seen it, even after seeing Rosemary's Baby, this is different enough that I would say about, even up to about three quarters of the movie,
I didn't really know what the fuck was going on. Was it a ghost? Was it, like, what in the fuck was going on? Was it a, you know, did, like, what was going on with the other people in the hotel? Was it a haunting? Was, like, yeah.
Well, I ran for the door, and he was right here in front of me. He's right here, Michael.
And you know what? I gotta say, Christina Raines, she, fucking hot, man. Like, she is a good-looking girl.
She starts going through a Mia Farrow-esque transformation in this movie, because she starts getting paler, the eyes get more withdrawn.
You know what I like about it? Like, she visually, like, a little bit too thin for my liking, but visually stunning, like, her face and her hair, like, she is a good-looking girl. You know what I like about her? She's not, like, everybody's gotta be plastic and perfect nowadays. Like, right. Their teeth have to be fucking brilliantly white, they gotta have fake tits, they gotta have the nose job, you name it, you know, they're all buffed out. This girl had a small overbite, yeah. And it was cute. It wasn't perfect, but it was cute. Close-up of her breasts, you can see she still had kind of like pimples and stuff like right. That. She wasn't perfect, but she was a natural yeah. beauty, she and was I really liked that.
Unpretentious, you know, like she had, yeah, like you said.
For a model,
yeah,
you know. Usually models are like these, you know, they're these dumb bubble heads. She was exactly the opposite. She was very natural, beautiful, vulnerable.
You know, did you ever see the movie The Sentinel, Mr. Peterson? It's about the old guy who owns the apartment, which is kind of like the gateway to hell.
No, I didn't see that.
Oh. Well. You know who else was a huge fan of this movie, actually? It was Joe Dante.
Really?
We actually got to meet him at the Fan Expo last summer. And he actually makes reference to this movie in the opening scenes of The Burbs.
Yes. Corey Feldman.
Corey Feldman talks about the Sentinel at the start of the film, and there's good reason to reference it. I think it's, you know, that the house next door may be the door to hell. I think that a modern filmmaker could still learn quite a bit from this movie. That maybe not so much about pacing, but certainly about atmosphere and about the need for good mystery.
Good setting?
Yeah.
I am here, Holy Father. I have come that you may shed your burden in peace.
Let us score this film, Brian Stewart.
You know what? I'm going to give it a solid 7. 7 out of 10. Like I say, there are some things that, yes, the acting's a little bit wooden, but I mean, and people said Kim Novak was wooden in Vertigo. I mean, she's also somebody who's kind of shell-shocked. You know, she's going to be a little emotionally dead, right? But I thought Burgess Meredith and Chris Sarandon really sold it. Great gore effects for the gore moments that there were, and a good element of mystery and atmosphere. So, I think there's definitely more to appreciate than to dock at points for.
Cult sensation.
I'm going to go with 7. Yeah, it's... Once you get past the whole, ooh, that person's in this, oh, that person's in this, if you strip all of that away, looking back with like, oh, look what these people have gone on to do, they didn't do it in this one. So it's still enjoyable enough. This would be a maybe once every 5 years movie for me.
All people the Parker girl said she met.
All killers, all dead. She went to a party with 8 dead murderers.
Doesn't everybody?
As a movie, I'd give it 7, but for the appeal of watching all the different actors and actresses pop up during the film, it's fun. It's really fun. Yeah. So I would give it a 7.5. If you're a fan of religious horror, horror that deals with religion, good versus evil, heaven versus hell kind of deal, you really should watch this film.
Oh, the woman who lives in 5A, she's a recluse. She's no problem at all. She's a nun.
And there you have it, The Sentinel from 1977, directed and written for the screen by Michael Winner, based off a novel by Jerry Konvitz. The film stars Burgess Meredith, Christina Raines, and Chris Sarandon, but check out the supporting cast members this movie features. Martin Balsam from Psycho, John Carradine, Jose Ferrer. The real estate lady is played by Ava Gardner. She was a cinema queen back in the 50s, playing along with Humphrey Bogart. We've got Jeff Goldblum, Nana Visitor, Tom Berenger, Eli Wallach, Christopher Walken, Beverly D'Angelo, William Hickey, and we dare you to find Richard Dreyfuss in The Sentinel. He's in there, but you gotta be on your toes to catch him. At one time, John Williams was scheduled to write the score for The Sentinel, but he ended up working with a guy called Lucas, and they made a little film called Star Wars in that same year. I wonder what things would have been like if he had stuck with The Sentinel. The film's out on Blu-ray and the transfer looks great, so we hope we've inspired you to take a crack at it. We thank you again for spending some time with us, and we look forward to seeing you at the next horror lecture. For the world-famous Brian Stewart and the cult sensation Nick McPherson, this is Cash Wampum reminding you that there is a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the hell out of you. And we're going to help you find it. Right here at Horror 101, educating your fears.